Whose ears are ready for insights and advice on what it takes to be a great marketing leader?
As a marketing leader, we know your time is valuable, which is why we're thrilled you're spending it with us to get all the insights and advice you need from CMO Convo.
Hi, Amanda. Welcome to CMO Convo. How are you doing today?
Hey, Will. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. And it's going to be a very, very interesting topic of conversation because it's one that I feel like I'm kind of struggling with at the moment. And that's how do CMOs keep pace with the actual pace of innovation when it comes to AI? Like AI has had massive impacts on the marketing industry and on marketing leadership already. But it seems like just the stuff that it can do is just always advancing. Like, how do you actually make plans around that? So I'm very, very interested to get your perspective on that today, Amanda. But before we do get into that, maybe you could introduce yourself to the audience, tell us a bit about your background and why this topic was one that you wanted to talk about on the show.
Sure. I'm the Chief Marketing Officer at Bloomreach, which is an AI-based company that services the e-commerce industry. So that probably has a lot to do with why I want to talk about this topic, but also it's impacting everything that I do. I'm in B2B marketing, but we serve B2C customers. I've been in marketing, B2B SaaS marketing specifically, for over 20 years. And I would say innovation is the name of the game in SaaS for sure. And so while this doesn't feel demonstrably different from periods of innovation we've had in the past, it's certainly the pace of innovation, as you say, is like nothing we've ever seen before. So it is top of mind in every conversation that I have. And therefore, as a student, I may not have all the answers. If I did, I would probably start my own company. But as a student, try to help where I can with other CMOs who are struggling with similar things.
Yeah, I think if we had like the ultimate answers, we wouldn't be sat here on a podcast right now. We'd probably be like making big decisions with very, very, very important people about the direction
exactly.
of AI. But we can give our best perspective on it and give our best advice to CMOs on like how you're responding to the pace of innovation yourself, Amanda. So, but before we do get into that, let's actually like talk about the pace of innovation. I did try and do a bit of research to see if there are any stats about like how much the advancement in AI capabilities has accelerated over the last few years. And I couldn't actually find anything. Do you have any awareness of like how much things have accelerated over say like the past year,
Amanda? I do. Yeah. And I can, our CTO, Zun had actually published a study that showed the pace of innovation and algorithms. I can share it with you so that you can post it with your notes or something, but it's 100-fold development in algorithms in a 6-month period. And that's just continuing to develop on itself because this version of generative AI has been around for a really long time. I mean, again, Bloomreach is an AI-based company. We started over 15 years ago with Google search engineers. Google has been in the AI space. Every technology vendor that you talk to, for the most part, has some type of AI. Your mobile phone, Uber, there's just AI is woven into everything. But generative AI, this is really the first time that we're seeing that it's creating rules and responses and things that it was not programmed to do. And so the fact that it is learning so quickly and developing on top of itself is what is just, you know, mind blowing for the world today. And I think that as a result is where we're seeing these 100x levels of innovation because the AI itself is contributing.
Yeah, it's exponential growth as well, because it is sort of self-sustaining, which is almost a bit of a worry, at least from people who like watch a lot of sci-fi and stuff like that, I think. But I think in terms of like actual like marketing and in business, I think one of the things that really, really worries me for CMOs and marketers is how do you make plans ahead when that pace of innovation is constantly increasing? Like, is there going to be like a plateau that we reach and we'll be able to say, okay, that's it. AI is just going to be at this level for a while. We can start making plans around its capabilities. Or is this just going to be the rate that it's at the moment? Now we've just got to hold on for the ride kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that where historically we see things, innovation in particular, slow down and appropriately so is when regulation gets involved and people start to really understand the potential impact. And with any technology, you have good actors who are trying to do really good things, like we're seeing AI be used for medical purposes, for cancer research, for crunching large numbers of research data that help us come to insights and analysis significantly faster, months faster than we've been able to do in the past. So there's really good uses for it. And then there's bad actors as well, people who are using AI to find information and steal identities. And I don't know if you heard of the the deep fake of the CFO of a company that ended up the team thought it was the CFO and wired funds. So appropriately so, we're going to see regulators step in and really start to control the technology. Air Canada recently had their customer service bot engage and offer a customer a discount that the team had not actually created. AI generated it itself, and they've been held liable for an agent, even if it was artificial, acting on their behalf, and they needed to honor that discount. So we're definitely going to see innovation slow down as regulation comes in. But I think right now people are trying to figure out, how do we regulate it? How do we really get on top of it? So we still have some time, I think, where it's going to be continually exponential, but it will slow down.
So that, and I think the other issue that with the regulation is, are those regulations even going to be up to date to the latest capabilities by the time they decide on it? Like, a lot of these decision makers who are working on these regulations, they're notoriously not that tech savvy. Let's put it that way, I say, shall we? But I think this year is probably the year where people wake up to the real need for a lot of regulation around, particularly with generative AI and with the deepfakes and stuff like that. It's an election year for a lot of places. Right. At the time of recording, it's 2024. So the US, the UK's got a general election late this year. There's a lot of European elections happening this year. So yeah, I imagine this is going to be the furnace in which the regulations are forged probably this year. So we'll probably be talking very differently in 2025 about where things are at. But when it comes to marketing strategy, I suppose, like, I've touched a little bit on what my concerns over the pace of innovation are with just knowing exactly what you can actually do and plan ahead with your strategy. But what are the other things that are issues for CMOs? What are the issues for you, Amanda, when it comes to trying to keep pace with the innovation in terms of how you strategize, how you plan out your actions as a CMO?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the problem is the same. How do I stay ahead of my competition and meet consumer demands? So that's pretty much what we have always been dealing with. But as you're saying, there's so many more tools. And so at marketers, we love our tools. We have the Frankenstacks. We believe that if there's a problem, there's a technology answer to it. And that's for the most part our DNA. It certainly is mine. But now that there are hundreds of tools coming available, how do you know that the data is going to be secure, that it's going to function in the way that it says it's going to function? A lot of these AI startups have two or three people on their teams. So how do you know that it's going to exist in 5 years and you're not going to be dealing with this consolidation, which will undoubtedly happen? So, I mean, there aren't super easy answers to this, but I will say what is very true is that scale is going to happen. So looking at the size of our teams that we have now and thinking about growth in the 30, 40, you know, our targets are in the 50% year-over-year growth ranges in again, B2B SaaS, which is maybe indicative of the founder more so than the market. But what we have to do is plug technology in that gives us a competitive differentiation. And I do think that will be significantly easier without adding headcount with new AI tools. What is actually going to help us win, though, I think, is going back to our storytelling roots, because technology and automation is going to be significantly easier than it's been before. I've built my career on marketing technology, automation, scale, putting together these Frankenstacks in a way that creates competitive differentiation. I no longer think that will actually be a differentiator, because it will be too easy to build the technology and create that scale. It will revert back to, I don't want to say our Mad Men days, maybe now our Mad Anyone days, yes. But really, really focused on storytelling and connecting at an emotional level. So I think if you focus your strategy on that, how do I tell a better story and connect with my audience, knowing that this technology is going to be, the technology landscape at least, is going to be evolving pretty dramatically for the next 18 months? I think you'll be okay. But I say that with the amount of confidence that I have.
That's really interesting, Amanda. I never really thought about it being like this kind of leveling the playing field to allow the human creativity to kind of shine through, that kind of perspective on it. Like, I've heard a lot about sort of like how AI is going to free up people's time to be able to focus on creativity and stuff like that. And to be honest, I've heard a lot of people say those things, but I haven't heard that much from people actually doing the work saying they've got more time to be creative, but that's beside the point. But I do like this idea that sort of like, yeah, creating tech stacks and creating these kinds of Franken tech stacks that aren't, that require a lot of work, quite a lot of maintenance, making that a lot more sort of plug and play for a lot of companies, and then allowing us to actually have that space to focus on that kind of storytelling aspect. I think that's a really interesting perspective. Is that something you're working on currently at Bloomreach? Is that something that you're working on with your team? Like, I'd like to hear a bit more about that.
Yeah. So there's two angles. There's our team internally. We actually, there's a startup called Character Quilt, and I'll give you the use case of what they have actually done to free up our creative thinking. So historically, to do persona research, you would develop a survey, you'd get some quant data, you'd create a questionnaire, you'd work with interviewers, you'd pay $450 per interview, you'd try to get as many interviews in your ICP as you could to get that qualitative analysis and those good quotes. You would then crunch that data, a team would crunch that data, they try to understand insights and patterns in order to create a perspective, and then you and your team and probably a couple of agencies would crunch through that, try to find a red thread, and then develop a story out of it. Well, Character Quilt does all of that automatically, including, because again, like I love an example of my colleague talks about AI. If you were to read an entire book, you would forget what was at the beginning of the book by the time you got to the end of it. Whereas AI remembers everything and it reads the book in 2 seconds. So you now have this tool that can ingest and understand and create patterns in data like this in milliseconds. So that whole process that I just told you of capturing the data, pulling the surveys together, gaining the insights, none of that actually is deployed and creating any kind of value for our business yet. It's all just research. With AI, we can do that in a few days. We can actually execute the surveys. We can execute the recorded interviews. AI can crunch and understand that data, come back, provide quotes, messaging, positioning, analysis in a number of days, so that now we can actually change what we're doing as a marketing organization and impact the market faster. That's one example, very simple example. And there's so many other things that I could tell you that our team are doing, but I'll move on from that. On the B2C side, what Bloomreach is doing, for example, say you've been on vacation and your job is running paid advertising for an e-commerce company. You come back from vacation and you want to understand how your paid ads did. Or while you were on vacation, something happened in the macro environment, which none of us have experienced recently.
Oh, yeah,
and all of these signals go off. And the way that your business is running needs to completely shift the trends, the keywords, those kinds of things. AI can detect that and actually create recommendations for you so that you're not coming back from either vacation or a night off and having to take the time to gather those insights. You walk in with those insights and you're ready to immediately action them. So that's an example of what Bloomreach does on the B2C side, but then also how we're using AI on the B2B side.
Great stuff. I mean, I love was it Smart Quill? Sorry,
Character Quilt.
Character Quilt, yes. Yeah. I love that stuff with Character Quilt because it's really sort of shrinking that time to value very rapidly. Like you're getting those kinds of valuable insights that allow you to then produce things that are valuable to the company a lot quicker. And that's ultimately what we need AI to do. It's not going to be copying out like loads of copy for people. It's not going to be writing social media posts. The thing that's actually going to like drive efficiency forward for marketers is that kind of back end stuff, the things that you might have to wait around for, the thing that costs a lot of money as well that you said. And then that peace of mind from Bloomreach, oh wow, that's pretty mega. Like I can just picture sort of the utopian life of being able to just sit on the beach, go on holiday, not having to worry about checking my emails and stuff all the time, because there is this kind of background support there available there. So it's not just good for the company, it's good for that sort of personal well-being as well for marketers, hopefully. That's in the long run, that is. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it will be. I was recently at a conference and we were having this exact conversation and I asked, is there anyone here who does not use the internet every few minutes? Anyone in the audience? And of course, no, we all use it. And so it's this, extremely valuable tool. When you think about your mobile phone, you cannot live without your mobile phone. And that created, both of these innovations created entirely new businesses. My SaaS, the SaaS company that I work for, is because of cloud infrastructure happening. So we see this rebirth through technology multiple times. And it really is about connecting human creativity to scale and automation and freeing us up for more things that we love and enjoy. Like, again, like at this conference, when you ask, what are the things that matter to you? Family, food, maybe wine for me, for sure. Experiences. That's been true throughout humanity. And so if we use technology to give us more time for family and wine and experiences, ultimately we're doing something right.
Definitely. And then those kinds of experiences are what fuel people's creativity as well. People who live full lives are the ones who are able to bring those perspectives, bring those different ideas to the table. Like, someone who's just sat in, plugging away, doing lots of like background research, they're not really experiencing stuff that they're going to be able to bring to the table when it comes to creativity. And I think, as you were saying, like that kind of creativity is what's going to give people the competitive advantage in the future. If there is that kind of leveling of the playing field when it comes to AI technologies for a lot of companies. So it's clear there are a lot of benefits, and they're clear there are a lot of efficiencies and cost savings can be made. But at the same time, CMOs, by and large, are dealing with reduced marketing budgets and reduced budgets for their tech stacks. So it must be very difficult to know what to invest in order to actually try it out and see what works. Because most stuff you don't get an immediate kind of response from. You need to let it run for a certain level of time. And usually that does go beyond like the free trials that you might get with some services. So how can CMOs know what they should be investing in right now in order to start building this kind of AI capabilities into their tech stacks, especially keeping in mind sort of the pace of change? If you invest in one thing and then like a couple of months later, something brand new comes in and completely blows what you've just spent quite a large amount of money on out of the water, like how do you then go and communicate that to the CFO or to the CEO and be like, oh, well, I made the wrong choice, but this thing's better. Can we pay for that as well, please? Like, how do you kind of deal with those kinds of challenges as a CMO right now?
Yeah, I mean, luckily CMOs are not the only ones dealing with it. I mean, if you look at the AI, like anomaly detection in finance, the CFOs are also tasked with understanding how AI can better impact their financial realm. So making sure the invoices that are being sent in aren't fake. That's something that AI has a ton of great case studies around. Automating vendor onboarding and connecting sows. Like, so when we get a statement of work, reading AI and understanding that sow, and then when an invoice comes in, knowing that that has actually been delivered. So there's actually innovation on the finance side, on the revenue side, on the people side. We actually use a tool internally called Glean that goes through every application that you use as a business and becomes like your singular search engine for everything in business, which if your Google Drive looks like mine, Glean has been amazing. So every single team is being dramatically impacted by AI. So we all have that going for us. There's a baseline understanding of the threat and the opportunity. When it comes to testing, this has been part of the CMO role for a very long time. I think the benefit is that many of these AI companies are plug and play, PLG. So they have a free trial, they have a get started and give us a couple months, they have a month-to-month type contract. Certainly the startup ones, the ones that you need to be worried about, are they going to be around? Is it going to work? Can I trust the team? So that's a big benefit to the boon that we're seeing in the industry. We have someone on our team dedicated to AI, and he not only understands the benefit, but he also does some coding with AI because, again, that has also, we've seen the playing field leveled in coding applications as well. So even though he's not an engineer, he can actually use AI to write copy to build integrations like with Slack. So he actually created an integration where when a lead converts on a form for us in HubSpot, he created a research assistant that goes and researches the contact and the company, and then in the Slack thread responds with the information about the contact and the company. He just did it on like a Friday. So we have someone dedicated to tinkering with and trying tools and identifying opportunities. But then there are also vendors who've been around for much longer, like HubSpot, who are doing tremendous things in AI that are looking for beta customers to try things with. Clary, which is a revenue platform on the sales side. Clay, which is an up-and-comer, but they have founders that have been around the space for a lot longer, and their VC that's backed them gives you some confidence in the stability of that organization. So I think the understanding the company and the people behind the technology in this stage is really important, and being invested in it working 70% of the way, maybe 60%, and being on that journey of getting it to 100 and having confidence that the team and the money funding that company will help you leapfrog once they really get it right. And then also, again, as I mentioned, I have someone on my team that's really dedicated to doing research, trying tools, creating code, and that informs our team of a lot of different things.
Amazing. Yeah, I'm gonna start at the top with sort of like the company-wide kind of approach to AI. So it sounds to me like a way to be quite effective with having the resources to do this experimentation is to maybe have some kind of C-suite level alignment on some kind of like pot that you have for in the budget for spending on different innovations and trying out new different tools and stuff. And maybe that's something that needs to be agreed by the different members of the C-suite. Is this something that you've done, or is that just something that's kind of, it didn't need to be put into words? It's just something that was agreed upon sort of by, yeah, you just kind of agree to it naturally. This is the approach. I mean, you're an AI company, so I assume there is going to be some kind of like push for innovation in those respects. But like, how do you know that there is that kind of alignment there to go out and try different things and work across the entire company, not just within the marketing department?
Yeah, I'd say that this is where our knowledge as marketers really comes to play, because you're either working with an executive team that's fearful, that's really afraid about disruption or data privacy, particularly like in the healthcare realm. If you're a CMO at a healthcare company, you probably have a lot more handcuffs around trying things than a CMO of an AI company. So where you're coming from in the industry that you're in is definitely going to dictate how free you can be with innovations and trials, and how well you can actually work with and be a feedback loop for a startup. That is not something that's going to make sense for everybody. But I would say where we can actually leverage that is if the company is fearful, really helping to do the research and understand what your competitors in the space are doing, and try to help build that story of, are we going to be more afraid of the technology, or are we going to be more afraid of not existing in 5 or 10 years because our competitors are ahead of us? And being that voice of market shifts and trends and changes, which again is our job anyway, inside of the company, and using that to really help drive the executive team forward. I will say that our GIST team, our IT team, they're way more cautious. They're like, we can, one of our products, we ingest customer data, and we use that customer data to actually personalize experiences. So rightly so, our GIST team is very concerned about data leak and the lack of data privacy, particularly with customer information. So what systems we connect to AI and how we use that could actually have brand reputation issues if we do unintentionally connect to an AI tool that then leaks data. So being hyper aware and acknowledging that these fears are true, and still continuing to provide the research and direction of ways that we can safely try and innovate. I do think both of those things can be accomplished, because again, it's our job to tap into emotions and build stories and convince people to make decisions. And I think this is a great opportunity to do that internally as well.
Definitely, definitely. I definitely want to explore more on the data protection topic in a little bit, but I want to keep going with sort of the line we were on already, and that's the in-house expert. Obviously, that's a great boon for you in the executive team, like being able to have someone who can provide that kind of information. But what about his impact in the rest of your team? Like, is he? Sorry, I'm saying he. Is it a he?
It is a he.
Is he involved with sort of like train the team in AI usage? Is he keeping them up to date on sort of like best use cases, best practices for AI? Like, I imagine he's got to be very, very useful for helping people get to grips with new tools quite quickly in that respect.
Yeah. So we do have, luckily we have a very tech savvy team. So everybody's pretty interested. We're sending each other tools and things every day. So our, the person who owns AI for us really owns the strategy and how it connects, but I do not stop people from trying and innovating. So anybody can try anything. They just can't connect it to real data or real systems. Our CTO actually is former NVIDIA. And then, as I mentioned, we have an entire, hundreds of AI engineers who've been building our search engines and our AI technology for a very long time. So I would say that while from a marketing perspective, we're probably pretty advanced on the AI side. But when you look in our company, we are babies in comparison to the rest of the AI knowledge in our company. So our CTO does lead. He actually does biweekly calls where he does an open forum Q&A. And we, everyone, including marketing, are able to join and ask questions and talk through tools and ideas and get his perspective and feedback in addition to the other AI engineer teams that we have.
Awesome. Yeah. So you've got kind of just like this little sort of laboratory going on where there's lots of people working on different things. Like, I don't want to use like the thousand monkeys with the thousand typewriters analogy kind of thing here, but it is kind of like it's experimentation at a certain scale kind of thing. And that's how you're going to get these interesting things, because people are trying out different stuff. People who might not even be aware of something not being possible might try something and then they somehow find results. And that's how you get these kinds of crazy innovations that are going to drive things forward at the end of the day. And again, when we're going back to what we're talking about, that kind of creativity, like that bringing up the creativity isn't just about someone being able to write better copy or come up right. with better videos. It's also these innovations about processes and stuff like that as well. So having more time to work on that and not having that taken up by these sort of like very repetitive manual tasks, that's going to be a big game changer, I think, across the board, not just for marketing, but for business as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, one of the other things that I'm super excited about is AI's ability to, if you think about contracting, as I was talking about earlier. So one marketers, the absolute bane of our existence is trying to get a contract through legal and signed. AI is going to be able to really understand how close that contract language is to things that normally get approved and score it. Say, this is 95% likely to, and we, as you said, we can be significantly more creative in our processes. Okay, if this has a 95% accuracy, I'm just going to highlight in red the couple things that don't match or sound atypical, and then legal only needs to focus on that. They can improve it, move it forward. Budget management. There's so many things that when it comes, like the parts of my job that do not create value for the company, but that have to be done in order to get to value creation. Those, I do believe that those will be dramatically transformed for the good, and the team collectively will be happier for it.
Yeah. And it's not the type of stuff that marketers get into the industry in the first place. Like, I don't know many marketers who want to sit in front of budget spreadsheets all day or want to be bothering with like legalese and contracts and stuff like that. Like, they want to be actually creating stuff. They want to be doing something cool. They want to be like using their creative muscles, because that's why people get into marketing at the end of the day, because they are creative people. So yeah, that does sound like really, really effective right there. And then lastly, when you were talking about choosing the right companies to partner with, the right technology partners, I think you did touch on this, but like, let's see if we can lay out some like criteria just as like maybe a little soundbite for the listeners. Like, what are the criteria that people need to follow when they're kind of choosing the right technology partners to work with when it comes to AI? Like, what do you look for when you're looking for the right right person or the right company, even the right organization?
Yeah. So people do matter. So I really, really focus on the founders and the people who are behind the company. I need to know that they're in it with me, that we're partners. They need to be solving a unique problem, or they need to have identified a way to create significant scale. So in the example that I used earlier of Character Quilt, not only are they creating a significant amount of scale, but they're also solving a unique problem in like ingesting voice of the customer into everything that you do in a really easy and automated way. So that was a twofer, so to speak. But I would say really the people behind it, the unique problem they're solving or the scale that they're providing. And then the last one is really their pace of innovation. So if they have launched and they kind of are stuck there, they're going to be out innovated. So I want to know and understand that they believe that they're not done, that they have a lot left they need to do. And in order to do that, they need really good funding or they need a lot of money in the bank. So while those are normal checkboxes that we would look at with prior vendors, that still holds true. The challenge is in today's day and age, it's particularly easy in the AI space to get money and get a lot of money. So if you are working with a very new startup, everything sounds good. You don't really know the founders, but they seem like good people. They're innovating and they have good money in the bank. Definitely connect with those investors. Why did you invest? Who else is in this portfolio? If that investor has bet on a lot of companies in a similar space, they're hoping for a unicorn. They're not completely convinced that one of them is right. I'd be a little more suspicious of that company than maybe one where they've got a really good relationship with that investor. That investor is partnered with actually making them into the unicorn, and they're not placing bets. And in a lot of areas, they probably will still have multiple bets, but just not a bunch of duplicated ones.
Yeah. And the companies that aren't willing to let you do that kind of due diligence, I imagine they're not the ones you want to be partnering with at all. Like, they might be like, absolutely, oh no, this is proprietary information and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you do need to have that kind of information to be able to have that level of trust that you need to make that kind of investment.
Absolutely. And I, having been in SaaS for, again, the last 20 years, I've experienced bad leaders, bad founders, and culture matters to the quality of the technology and to how much they care and connect with you as the customer, and then ultimately how you're able to serve your end customer. So that is always at the top of my list.
Great stuff. So Amanda, I'm going to maybe turn the page a little bit now. I feel like I don't even know if the kids say this anymore, but we've been kind of talking a bit like first world problems. We're like, AI is just accelerating too much. It's getting too good. How do we keep up with it? But with this acceleration of innovation, there's also increasing concerns over stuff around data privacy, stuff around ethics, stuff around intellectual property, stuff around just like the rights to people's appearances appearing in all these different generative AI stuff. So how can CMOs stay on top of all that as well? Like, how informed do they need to make sure that they're going in the right direction with AI on an ethical and moral level?
Yeah, and this is always a really tough question, because my version of morality is probably very different from yours. That is a church and state and at an individual level to a certain extent. But I would say a mentor of mine from a very long time ago said, if it's right for the customer first, and it's right for the company and it's the right thing to do, then do it. And I think that's a good guidepost. So is my customer going to find this, whatever this end outcome, to be very beneficial? Is the company going to benefit from it? Is it a good thing to do? And then is it right? An example would be like getting a product into my customer's hands exponentially faster than they could have ever gotten it before. Will my company benefit from that? Yes, because they'll get revenue. But then I'm going to be creating a bunch of sustainability issues because I'm shipping it as fast as I can. And I'm probably going to create some issues with my delivery infrastructure and my warehouse teams. So it's really, at the end of the day, not the right thing to do because of all these downstream reasons. I think going through that matrix with when you're trying and testing AI is super important. But the reality is there will absolutely be people who create technology to take advantage of the unlock that AI has provided that regulation has not caught up with yet. And ultimately, we just need to do our best to be hyper aware and suspicious, for the most part, of companies until we can validate that they are good actors.
Definitely. So it sounds like within Bloomreach, you are approaching experimentation with kind of like a guided, controlled approach. You mentioned like not using actual like customer data for experimentation, stuff like that. Like, can I hear a bit more about are these like official guidelines that you have there? Yeah. Are these like just, I'd like to hear a bit more about them.
Our IT team, in combination with our technology team, published some AI principles. So cannot connect it to live systems. You cannot use actual customer data. You cannot connect confidential information. We have sandbox environments in a lot of different instances that we can use. And then we have similar to sandbox, but more spreadsheet uploads and things like that, rules around importing data for testing. I use ChatGPT to do things like write resume copy and things like that. So things that are publicly available information, you have pretty free rein to ask for information. But we do have also regulation and monitoring around if you're importing documents that, for example, if I were to take our, 8 years of financial history and import it to ChatGPT, which now it'll be available and accessible by everyone, that is not allowed. So we have published those principles. We've done a security training on it. Everyone has had to go through the training program. Hopefully they didn't use AI to do the training program for them, but we are trying our best.
Well, I mean, that's all we can do at the moment, but it does sound like it's a very well thought out approach. When it comes to setting up these kinds of sandboxes, and I've heard talk around using stuff like data clean rooms as well. Like, is this like something that's fairly easy to get set up, or is it something that requires like a lot of work on the IT department's behalf?
I mean, I'm sure my IT team would like me to say it takes a lot of work. I would say it's been pretty fast. Again, with my experience being on the SaaS side of things, this is something normal that we do for our customers. We set up testing environments and sandboxes and those kinds of things. So it might be a little bit more our business as usual. But I wouldn't say it's as easy as just signing up for a trial on a technology and just jumping in and using it. But I do think it's a necessary, probably 2-ish week delay to make sure that your safe room, so to speak, is set up.
Okay. Yeah. I was just wondering in terms of like the practicalities of people with maybe like smaller resources or people who aren't mm-hmm. necessarily in like a very like tech driven company. Is this something that people can be able to do? Or would they need to like maybe hire like an external agency, experts on this kind of matter that they'd need to set up this kind of process?
Yeah, I mean, there are even vendors that okay. do this, and then agency partners. Several agency partners are very equipped at doing this, because usually, particularly, I mean, on marketing, we're very used to on the website side, setting up a website, creating our design, doing the testing, and those kinds of things on that side. So it's a very similar setup. The difference being, you do want to add some kind of data into it so that you're doing production level testing. And that's probably the thing that would take the most time. If you don't want to actually import real data for the AI to process and understand, you need to create copies of that data that is anonymized, but still useful to know whether or not the tool is going to work. And that's where I definitely think agencies or businesses that do this are probably an easier way to go if you don't have internal resources.
Okay, interesting. And then another big concern with AI in the marketing industry and a lot of industries is around job security. I mean, I'm assuming it's not something that's a massive concern to the people at Bloomreach. It's like, you're an AI company, you'd kind of expect most people to be sort of like AI evangelists on this front. But I know at least from my own perspective, when I saw ChatGPT hit the market, I was like, okay, that's it. Game over for copywriters. I'm out the door in a few years. And then Sora AI, they had a big reveal a few months ago. And I know quite a few people in our video team were quite concerned over that as well. Like, how do you kind of, what kind of duty do CMOs have to kind of like take those concerns into account? Like, how could you kind of care for the well-being and longevity of your team when it comes to thinking around what AI is going to have an impact on in the industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is why prompt engineering is becoming such a big thing, and also understanding how to prompt AI, because where AI is responding, it doesn't actually understand the context itself. It's building a mathematical association between a series of words, and then it's saying, this is probably most likely what this person is asking me. So when you say, what color is the sky? And AI responds, the sky is blue. It has no idea what the sky is, and it has no idea what color is. But because it's crunched so much data and conversations where these kinds of questions have been asked and this kind of answer has been provided, that's what AI is doing. We have contextual understanding. You think of orange. I just say orange and multiple things come to mind. It could be orange juice. It could be an orange. It could be the color orange. It could be orange crayon. But as humans, we have all of these different sensory capabilities to actually create an understanding and an idea. And that's what AI is not doing. It's not creating an idea. It's responding and reacting. And that's where I think marketing will continue to have absolutely even more impact than before, because we're going to have so much space for ideas. And when you think about the reality that, in the example I used earlier, that we're not going to take months now to understand the customer. We'll be able to understand the customer in a week. The amount of creativity that I can come up with to connect with that customer is not something AI is going to be able to do for me. So I have that. There's physical things that marketing does, like generating events. going, actually, AI cannot build a booth. It cannot, you know, drive people to a dinner. There is this conversation. Yes, AI could probably come up with an initial set of questions, but the free flowing fluidness of this conversation, we could not have with AI. Video from Sora, you need to tell it what you want it to create. And then there's going to be tweaking, and that's not exactly right. Some of the associations that AI makes will be completely wrong. So you as a human are going to have to continue to guide it to get it to a better place. And so I think that if we really think about AI as a tool to help us scale, and maybe I'll get to a place where I can work 4 hours a day instead of 12 because AI is making me so much more efficient, it will not replace human creativity and human connection.
Definitely not. I mean, having said that, when ChatGPT launched, I saw the writing on the wall. As I got used to the tool, as I got to experience it, a lot of those fears have been lessened, at least, I would say. I just think there's, with these efficiencies coming in, is that going to mean we just need less marketers? Is the marketing industry going to be smaller? That's the main thing I'm thinking about. And that the entry level to the industry as well, how are people going to learn what is good copy if they're not necessarily writing that copy? If you've got, I learned to write copy writing loads and loads of tweets for a company where I was running the social media. That's how I learned to do conversion copy.
Yeah.
If you've got an AI that can just produce 1,000 ready to go tweets, how is that person going to actually learn what is good copy and what isn't good copy in the long run? We're talking about this from the perspective of people who are fairly experienced when it comes to marketing. We know what good marketing is. We know what good copy is. We know what good design is. So we're able to spot that in AI. But what about the next generation of marketers, ones who are coming up with this generative AI built into their processes already? How can CMOs make sure that they're still teaching them the very principles and fundamentals of what makes effective marketing if they're leaning on AI to kind of support them and to replace those kinds of tasks that younger marketers were doing initially?
Yeah, I think that they're just going to learn faster. So the reason why we know what good copy looks like and what good ad content looks like is because we ran the ads and we got the test data back and we saw conversion dropped. It took us 3 or 4 weeks, maybe $10,000, maybe $100,000, depending on how good we are at running our tests. And the reality is we're not going to have to go through that experience anymore. People are going to be able to understand what an audience resonates with pretty quickly. We use a tool called Upside to do our ad copy testing. And so we'll put 50 ads into it. It'll run against a panel test, and then we'll get the data and analytics back, and then we'll run an ad copy test. We won't have to do that anymore. We will just be able to ask AI, here is the message that I'm trying to convey. What is the copy that's most likely to convert? And even if at the point when we're actually able to connect it to our Google Analytics and our ad platforms, on the Bloomreach side, we can say what ads not only have the highest conversion, but the highest profit margin as well, which ads are converting for products that deliver the highest value back to our company. That data is going to be available to us. And that is what ultimately inspires the next set of ads and the next set of thinking. So I don't think that we will lose the training and education. I think we will expedite people's onboarding.
I hope so. I definitely hope so. Yeah, Amanda, it definitely is. There are a lot of potential there in terms of gaining much richer understandings a lot quicker than when I was learning to write copy. So yeah, let's hope that is the way things go. And then, Amanda, I know it sounds like Bloomreach is very, very aligned in the executive level when it comes to AI, but let's talk a little bit about CMOs who might be under certain pressures from other stakeholders within the business to start using AI in certain ways. And AI makes a lot of headlines. We see a lot of stuff about these crazy capabilities. How do CMOs deal with the classic, the CEO's read something in Forbes at the weekend, comes in on Monday and says, we should be doing this right now? How can CMOs kind of manage that kind of pressure from parts of the business?
Yeah, well, I'm sure we are all used to it. We could probably come up with a drinking game with a number of stories that we all have of our CEOs reading something. I hate when my CEO goes on vacation because he comes back with so many ideas. But yeah, I mean, I think that find the big win. Find the win in your team, interview, ask where, if you are not super comfortable with AI yet and you're concerned about how it's going to impact your team and you do not want to try it in a bunch of different ways, or you feel that it could even potentially be disruptive to the culture that you have as an organization, find one big win. And I would do that by interviewing my stakeholders. CEO, where do you think marketing is the slowest? CFO, where do you think marketing is the most inefficient? CRO or revenue team, where could you use an exponentially greater amount of support from marketing? And find a big win and put all of your AI eggs, so to speak, in that basket and try to solve that win sooner than later and get your team. That'll do a couple things. It'll catalyze your team around the value that AI could potentially have without disrupting their jobs. And two, it will give you that credibility in the executive level to think in a way, to use innovation in a way that will actually transform business outcomes.
I love that, Amanda. I think that's a great note to end on there. I think that's a great perspective to have in terms of how CMOs need to be approaching AI as a whole. Like it does need to be something that's agreed like across the entire C-suite. It needs to be something that makes sense for the business, makes sense for the team as well. And I think you've really encapsulated it right there with that little sort of description of how to go about things. So Amanda, I know we've covered quite a lot here, but let's see if we can sum things up. Maybe we just like some golden rules, some main takeaways that you want for CMOs to take away from this conversation. Like what should be top of mind for CMOs when they're looking at sort of like the innovation, the pace of innovation of AI at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, my recommendation, and I recognize this may not be right for everyone, but absolutely be curious, build a network, connect with me on LinkedIn, message me, ask questions, and I'll connect you with people that I know, but be curious, build a network specifically with those around you who are interested in AI and who want to push the envelope, if that is of interest to you. And then the third is really make sure that you're identifying opportunities to transform your business, not small, not slight, not very little insignificant things that nobody's going to pay attention to, but focus on transformation. And I think if you're plugged into those three areas, you're going to be just fine.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think that is absolutely the perfect note to end on there, Amanda. Thank you very much for your time. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I found it really interesting. I think you've got some great perspectives on this topic, Amanda. So thank you very much for joining us today. I've genuinely enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, same. Thanks for having me again.
And I want to thank the audience as well. I'm sure you've enjoyed this conversation. As I said, this is a big challenge for CMOs, for marketers, for pretty much everyone who's paying attention to AI at the moment, is keeping up that pace of innovation. We try our best to cover it as much as possible on the show, but it's always accelerating. So if you do hear any cool stuff, join the CMO Alliance community and let us know about it. But in the meantime, I'll let you go. Thank you very much for joining me. We'll be back soon with some more CMO combos.
Like what you heard from this CMO combo? Make sure you hit that subscribe button and leave a rating so the whole world knows how great it was.